2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Open Championship Edition of the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS Podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like what you hear in the podcast and want to join for access to the Research Station, Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, VIP articles, and premium Slack chat, be sure to check us out using the link in the description. We provide sharp content for a wide variety of daily fantasy sports, all for one affordable low price, and you can get a lifetime 10% off and support the pod using promo code TACO. I'm here today with Josh Thomas, DFS Up North, who does our showdown notes in the Chalk Donkey VIP article. How you doing, Josh?
What's up, man? Good to be back.
Yeah, really excited to get into the third major of the year. Always interesting to have the British Open.
I'm excited. Open. This is like one of my favorite events.
It's not really one of my favorite, honestly. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was the greatest event, like, ever, all time. Stenson winning,
your boy,
in amazing fashion. But you know, someone that does a lot of the numbers and stuff, the European numbers and the PGA numbers don't like to mesh all that well. So it's can be kind of complex to have to look at guys and look at their European tour stuff and the PGA tour stuff and kind of weigh it against each other. But it is a really nice week to play in the low stakes and stuff. A lot of the guys don't know, a lot of the European tour names out there and stuff, but I don't know. It's gonna be an interesting week. I think honestly, that's kind of gone to the wayside of it. I think people really know a lot of the big European tour names. We'll have a few certain guys, especially down the value section, that'll be really, really popular. But I don't know. What do you think about just like the strategy this week?
It's tough because you get your lineups together and you can do all the research all week and then the weather can change Wednesday night and you just light them all on fire and start over. It plays such a big role in how we're going to attack the slate. So it's interesting. I mean, there's soft pricing everywhere. There's some great values on the board. I think with the proliferation of PGA DFS and all the touts and smart guys on Twitter out there, that it's a lot of these, you might, a couple years ago you were able to find a gem that down in that 6K range, and now that guy's going to be 10% owned just because of the way the community is now and how smart some of these players are. So it's I love the British Open. I like being able to get up in the morning and have my coffee and guys are already half done with their rounds and they're done by 2 o'clock and I can go on with the rest of my day, but it's going to be a fun week.
Yeah. And I like having guys tee off well before my bedtime.
Right.
Yeah.
It
used to be the case that, Bubba Watson and Phil Mickelson, guys like that, were always just super owned. And now like everybody hates those guys now, DFS community has kind of evolved up and down,
right? And you can there's guys there's people who can swing ownership just by mentioning their name on a pod. So it's interesting, and hopefully we can take advantage of some of that this week and get some big wins.
Yeah, definitely. You guys did pretty well in the showdown last week. You should tell them what all happened.
Something that we've been kind of working on the last couple weeks here and had some big wins on Saturday. I know guys were Cat Country, a couple other guys cleared a couple $100. I took third place in the GPP, and it was a nice day for us. And then Sunday, one of our members, Cat Country, won $15,000. He took home first place in the big $6 GPP on DraftKings, and that was pretty fun. I had a nice sweat in the weekend FD. I went to sleep Saturday night on my lineup, and I think I was up like $1,300 winning three GPPs. And Sunday, when everything was said and done, I think I took home $70. So that's the DFS golf for you in a nutshell right there.
I'm just upset I didn't play enough Showdown when it came to the later weekend. Stupid NASCAR night races.
Yeah, NASCAR got in your way. But yeah, we were on it. We jumped on Dom Bozzelli on Sunday. Fortunately that didn't cost Cat. He made a double on the last hole and lost his bogey free and all that. So that was big. Who was it on Saturday that we were all over? Tyler Duncan shot in 62. Yeah, he went crazy. Yeah, just so we kind of had the nuts there this weekend, and I like doing the Showdown stuff because you're able to, you know, in tournament make a play on a guy who you think is, you know, what we target usually is guys who are not putting very well but doing everything else so good because putting can flip on the flip day to day. So it's we had a good week in Showdown. So it's been a lot of fun, and that stuff's all in our Slack channel that our VIPs get members or get access to.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really good like Friday. I don't know why I just didn't play more. I had a good Saturday of like the few lines I made. Just
dang NASCAR.
I'm really excited to see the contest sizes stay big. I was worried that it would kind of fall, into
me too. I was
obscure slates.
I was actually I was really concerned. I was disappointed when they got rid of weekend golf, and now that I feel like we found an edge, like I love Showdown. We have guys in our Slack that are just playing mostly strictly Showdown instead of 4-day for the week because they've been so profitable in it.
It's fun. We got to talk about the course here, Carnoustie. It's 7,400 yard par 71, one of the rotating courses. We played here before in 2007 and in 1999. It's kind of a long time ago, so it's hard to just use the results from that event, but the course has not changed a whole lot. They haven't made major renovations, but it is a links style course. So it's very close to the ocean, very exposed and vulnerable to wind. We saw in 1999, the wind picked up. Even in 2007, in the final round there, the wind picked up, and there was like a 4-stroke difference between the early morning guys and the rest of the field. So obviously, we're going to have to wait on the weather for a lot of our calls here. There could be a giant advantage to a tee time, but so far we aren't seeing that. It seems a little bit mild this week, but you know, with wind, who knows? We won't really know until Wednesday.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I mean, we'll be on it in Slack, but it's right now it doesn't look like there's a huge advantage, so it's kind of just fire away. I do think even if it doesn't look like there's going to be a big advantage, attacking the slate by stacking, you know, AM or PM tee times is always sometimes a good idea because you could get lucky. Right now it doesn't look like it's going to be too bad, and I know Spieth was quoted saying today that it looks like it's going to be a pretty fair test for everybody.
Yeah, and we could see a little bit more scoring than we saw before. I mean, in 1999, the winning score was 7 over par, 6 over par. And 2007, it was 7 under par. So really giant swing. I expect it to be around like 10 under, 9 under or so. If the wind doesn't get too out of control, it sounds
if the wind's okay, we should see that. You know, it's kind of, if you look back at the results, it's played over par, under par, all the way back to the first one in 1931. If that holds true, then we'll see an over par score. But I don't see the, you know, right now looking at the weather, it doesn't look like it's going to be that big of a deal. And with how baked out this course is and how far these guys are able to hit some of these balls, I got to imagine we're going to see a 9-10 underscore winning this thing.
Yeah, I think Vegas will help us a lot when it comes to judging the amount of variance that's about to come. If we see everybody's Vegas odds rise come Wednesday, like the whole field as a whole kind of, you know, the guys in the front, if they rise, and that means they're kind of expecting it to be a little wild. But if the chalkier guys get chalkier, or if, you know, like DJ starts going down to like 12-1, 11-1, that kind of shows that they're expecting a bit more predictable of a tournament. So that's always just something to watch out for. We'll have those for you guys on Wednesday. This course, it's got seven long par fours. That's kind of the defining feature of this course. I know the Americans don't play on links style courses a whole lot. We've recently gone to one, the new course at the Byron Nelson tournament. So you can kind of look to that. It's hard to really make a whole lot of comparisons to courses that are on other sides of the planet. But, you know, for this week, what are you looking for, Josh, when it comes to some key statistics that we're going to be focusing on at a course that we don't have strokes gained data for?
Right. It's hard. You're coming to a course again that, you know, most of these guys haven't played. It's been, 11 years since it was hosted here. But, I'm just looking for overall total ball strikers. I feel like you can't go wrong with guys who just have solid tee to green games. I'm really looking for guys who are accurate with the driver. There's 111 bunkers on this course, and a lot of them are in play off the tee. And, concerned a little bit that, some of these bunkers that weren't in play previously now are, because of how dry the course is and that the balls are going to run out a little bit. But I'm looking for guys who are accurate drivers, guys who avoid double bogeys. I think we can look at a little bit of scrambling and around the green. With these harder, hopefully they can keep the greens kind of on. I think they stated that they want to be around a 10 on the stimp, which is pretty puttable.
That's really, really slow.
And should be able to hold a lot of balls. Yeah, that's pretty slow. But if they're able to do that, then, obviously looking for guys who are good at approaching the green. And greens and reg, I'm not going to really look at greens and reg, just because it's so, between the European tour and here, it's there's a big difference there. But looking at fantasy points gained, guys who are going to score. What are you, anything else you're looking for?
I'm thinking about the 10 stimp number, the 10 number on the stimp. That'd make it about the slowest course on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's what they said. And if you look at pictures, they've been watering the heck out of those greens. You can tell overhead where the greens are, because everything's brown and then there's a circle of green. So they've been watering them quite a bit, and they're trying to keep them, kind of in that 10-11 range. So that would help the scoring for sure, I think.
That would help your good putters be able to use their advantage over worse putters. They're allowed to be a lot more aggressive. Lag putting doesn't help as much when you're not on lightning fast greens. So it's kind of like last week, where you kind of want to look at strokes gained putting, at least initially.
Yeah, I think you could initially look at that for sure. Especially because you're going to see situations where guys are going to be playing, using the putter off the green too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like from the fringe. Yeah, it's going to pretty common tactic.
There's some collection.
Very
conservative. There's some collection areas where balls are gonna, sit, and you're gonna see guys using the putter from way out there too, which will be not as much as you would at like a course like St. Andrews, but it's still something that we can look at.
It's gonna help a lot of people who generally aren't very good at chipping the ball.
Right. Yeah, you'll see,
like Cantlay and Keimer come to mind there.
Oh, Patrick Cantlay. 110 bunkers on this course, not necessarily Patrick Cantlay's forte.
Yeah, it might be a little bit for him.
Yep. But yeah, I think you can also, obviously it's on a rotation every year, but traditionally we see guys who play well at British Opens play well at all of the British Open courses. So it's looking at some of those guys, and if it comes down to it in the lower ranges, I'm more likely to take a guy from the Euro Tour than I am to take a guy who's maybe never played over here, just for comfort. But it's I don't know, I feel like this is a tough week too, because you're gonna have to make some gut calls.
Yeah, that's definitely a smart thing to do, is take the European guys. I'm really going to try to not use guys that are brand new to like link style courses and stuff. That doesn't sound very smart this week.
No, and I was talking to one of our members today. Like Bronson Burgoon's been playing fantastic the last month. I'm not interested in playing Bronson Burgoon at the British Open in his first time overseas. Like that just sounds like a recipe for disaster to me.
There's no way that you need to spend only $6,300 on a guy. There's just way too much value out there to
yep.
consider that, and considering that he's not going to be sneaky, I mean, people are going to look at the game log and play him.
I mean, right. There'll be people that do that, but I can't get on board with that.
No, definitely not. So let's get into the top of the field here. You've got Dustin Johnson as a pretty big favorite. I know a 13-1 usually isn't that big of a favorite here, but he's just followed by Rose and Rory McIlroy at 16-1, 17-1. Then we've got Spieth and Thomas and Rahm, Ricky Fowler, Fleetwood, Koepka. Those are all the guys under 25-1. And they're all around $11,000 to $9,000 on DraftKings. This range here, it seems like a lot of the fades here are going to be really, really popular fades for everybody. And a lot of the favorite guys are going to be pretty much on everybody's radar. You know, Tommy Fleetwood has the course record here. He's going to be extremely popular. Koepka has been crushing it. You know, he's going to be incredibly popular as well. And then Justin Rose just underpriced, and he's just been way, way too good this season. So he's also going to be crazy. And then DJ is DJ. So it's hard to really pivot off of these guys because they're so good. And the other guys like Spieth and Rory are just so questionable.
Yeah, like it's tough because, you know, there's going to be chalk here, but we talk about it all the time. Some chalk is chalk for a reason, and sometimes you got to eat here and differentiate elsewhere in your lineup. But yeah, I think for me, it's DJ or bust making one lineup. You know, clear favorite, good value. We're projecting him to, you know, kind of blow away the field here. There's no one on earth playing better than DJ right now. So, for me, it's kind of DJ. You know, after that, I like a little bit of Justin Rose, and I'm gonna be big on Koepka, and I'll have a good shot of Sergio. The game theory play here is to play Spieth and Thomas, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like the greatest move right now. I mean, Spieth just seems really, really questionable. I know that price doesn't matter a whole lot this week, and he is the defending champion and all, but he's just going the wrong way in,
right,
like, especially his approach game. Like, he's been losing strokes kind of consistently over the last few events, and that's just not what you want to see. He's not really doing anything. I mean, he was putting just horribly, and now he's finally putting okay, and the rest of his game's just gone away from him.
Right. Yeah. When he was putting poorly, his approach game was so fire, but now it's seems like that's gone. And what are you going to do with Rory? Obviously not playing excellent by any means, 12th at the Travelers, 28th at the Irish Open, but you know, last three times out at the British Open, obviously at different venues, but fourth, fifth, and first.
I know he does play a lot better overseas. I mean, he's such a good play whenever he plays in the European Tour event. I know we usually only focus on him in the PGA Tour events where he could be kind of iffy when he's not winning the championship and all. But I think with Rory, I tend to target him a lot more on courses where he could just abuse like his off the tee game. Cause that's like the core part of his game. I know his approach game is in a pretty decent spot right now, actually, along with the scrambling game. It's just the horrible, horrible putter.
28th at the Irish Open, losing 1.3 strokes putting. So if he even gets that back to average, he's looking at a top 15 finish. But you're paying a pretty big price for a top 15 finish there.
Yeah, I mean, if you can find the money for him and you want to use him, I mean, I think he's a perfectly good GPP play. There's nothing wrong about that at all. I'm just a little bit skeeved out with him as being the second most expensive person on FanDuel. They have Rose priced a lot more appropriately, and they have Rory as like the, I think he's the third or fourth. He's the fourth third, most expensive fourth. There.
Yeah, they've got Koepka priced appropriately over there too.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's about where he should be right now. Like that guy's, he's come back alive. Yeah, he's kind of like Thomas. You can see him take the next step in his career to where
He's criminally underpriced on DraftKings this week, and obviously going to be popular because of that. But I mean, there's no question that Brooks can come out here and top 10, you know, even in the bad weather.
Yeah, I think Sergio is going to be just fantastic GPP play. I know he's been horrible on the PGA Tour side of things, just missing cut after cut. But recently he's gone back to Europe, put some top 15 finishes together. All sorts of top 10 finishes in his history here. Runner-up last time they played at this course. I mean, with Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka, Tommy Fleetwood, Paul Casey, all right there in his price range, and underpriced Jason Day, Molinari, who just won.
Sergio is going to be, I mean, if Sergio comes in around 10% or 12, even 12%, I can easily be double the field on him in GPP. He's you talk about, you know, you look for a guy whose tee to green game is excellent. And that's one of the first guys I think of as a ball striker is Sergio Garcia.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll have a bunch of Sergio this week, I think.
Yeah. I played the crap out of him, the BMW and the Open to France, just because I know, like, I've seen it before when Sergio's struggling in America, he can just go back to Europe and he always just crushes it in Europe. Whenever he picks up an odd tournament, he's always there competing.
Right, yeah. He had the 8th at the French Open, and that was the first time he's ever played that course.
Yeah. I mean, he's not bad. Usually he's, I mean, I think he has really good event history, like, every single major.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I know he's been bad recently, but, I mean, if you go back any amount of long term, he's one of the most consistent guys that we have on either tour.
Yeah, he's a gamer. And you look at, if you know, when we look at our research station, you know, we can see last tournament approach game or approaching the green, he lost minus 1.1. But that didn't he hit two balls in the water on like 18 at the French Open?
That'll mess it up pretty quick.
Yeah, that'll drop your approach stats real quick. But yeah, I really like Sergio this week in GPP.
Yeah, we know historically he's been on par with like the Scotts and the Stensons of the world, being one of the best approach artists. Right. So I wouldn't be too worried about that, but I guess we shouldn't spend all the time talking about Sergio, because Brooks, Tiger, Day, Fleetwood, they all really do deserve a strong look. And then Ricky Fowler, who actually comes in as one of the biggest odds to pricing values here. Had some close calls here before, knocked on the door of a major. Some would argue that he's the best player without a major, and that's probably right, but I still think it's Kuchar.
Sure.
Do you think he can break through here? I mean, is the...
You know, I watched a lot of Ricky last week at the Scottish Open, where he finished 6th, and he's got the game to play over here. He's, you know, I really think this is a good opportunity for him. And, you know, I spent some time building lineups the last day or two, looking at stuff, and I keep finding myself not with Ricky in my lineup. So just with the pricing, and he's kind of in a dead zone, like, is he going to come in under-owned here and be a great value play for us? I think I'm going to have to force him into some lineups. This is just seems like a great fit for him.
I think I think Ricky will probably be popular in like the quarter arcade, the dollar. Sure. Go up higher. I'm sure that his ownership will fall accordingly. I think that a lot of people are going to be on Koepka here and Fleetwood. I think they kind of force your hand a little bit here. And Fowler, I mean, he's been playing really consistent lately. I mean,
I was going to say, yeah, like, I mean, I know I said earlier that nobody's playing better than DJ, but it's you know, it goes DJ, Brooks, Ricky, if you really look at recent form.
If you look at just 2018, yeah, Ricky has been pretty great, had a really strong swing season, just some random miscuts and some
but even
big moments,
last
like players.
Last 4, 12, 20, 8, 14, 6, that's Scottish. Like, yeah, he's playing really well. Accurate driver of the golf ball, doesn't make a lot of, you know, stays away from a big number, you know, just solid all the way through. And that's the kind of guy we want to target here.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely like Fowler this week. I mean, it's hard to get off a cap gun. I kind of want to play a little Thomas, and of course his Rose there, but I think I'm going to have to carve out a little space for Fowler. I mean, I don't hate him. I'll probably try to just play him, in the larger dollar entries, and perhaps fade him more in the more public contests, just because he's so popular.
And that's
he's a real cutie pie.
That's something that's so easy for him. Like, right? And that's for us, like, at DFS Army with the domination station and stuff. It's easy for us to, you know, I can just, I, you know, say I'm going to make 20 entries for the dollar. I can just unclick Ricky in there and then make sure that I jack up his ownership percentage in you know, my higher dollar GPP stuff. So yeah, I'm big on Ricky. What are you going to do with Tommy?
Chalky Fleetwood. I'm putting him in one and done, and I'm going to try to draft him on a draft.com or play draft where he's still coming in really under projected. So I'm going to try to leverage him and, you know, I might make like a top 20 bet or something, but get my Fleetwood exposure in anything but DFS. Cause on DFS, we know Tommy Fleetwood's going to be chalk every time he tees it up. They right. love him.
Right.
At the Wells Fargo, I saw someone came up to Tommy and he just thanked him for all the money he made him on DraftKings. He was just like, keep playing me. And I'm sure a few days later, he was cursing his name because he missed the cut pretty badly there. But I mean, yeah, for the most part, like 2 weeks later, he's back to being the chalk again with some good finishes. Second right. at the US Open last time out. The course record great, here.
He's a great play. Like, I'll be under-owned a little. I'll be under the field on him. I don't know if I can really... I don't think you can full fade Fleetwood. Like you said, if you want to hedge on things like one and done and draft yeah. and stuff like that to get your Fleetwood exposure there, I think that's a good strategy.
Yeah, it's always good to consider playing chalky guys in formats where ownership doesn't matter.
Right.
And, you know, Fleetwood's recent finishes on the European Tour haven't been that great, you know?
No, he's been struggling a little. I mean, obviously he had the second place in the U.S. Open, but coming off of that, you know, 59, 66, nothing great.
Yeah, so I'm hoping the fade works out for DFS, but I mean, that would suck for one and done, but, you know, screw it.
And we've seen, you know, if you look at past champions on the British Open, a lot of guys coming in with solid form, top tens in the tournament before, and Fleetwood doesn't have that. So not that is necessarily a correlation, but something to look at.
Oh, yeah. It's all part of the big pie that we're trying to eat here.
Right.
Brooks Koepka, just how much are you using him? Because I'm starting to think you will be probably top three, top four in ownership.
I mean, at that price on Fan or on DK for sure. And I can never get FanDuel ownership right. So I mean, he'll probably be 50% there too.
They're kind of weird
off coming off a major win. Yeah, he's just in a smash spot on DK at that price.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the stats. And you gotta remember. Yeah, the stats are still a little bit messed up from the very beginning of the season.
When he had that wrist injury.
He was finishing dead last with the wrist injury, but I mean, since then he's been perfect.
Really right, like there's more. Not a lot of weakness in his game.
He's playing about as good as Justin Thomas usually does, and top 10 his last two times of the tournament. Just an excellent play.
Yeah,
that's why it's hard for me to roster a Sergio and leave Brooks just not played in the lineup. But you know, I mean, no one is safe here. It's a high variance tournament. He's still only 22-1. It's not like he's 10-1.
I mean, I think you could. There's a case to be made to make a really, really balanced lineup with, you know, even two of those guys like a Brooks and Sergio together, or Brooks and Tiger. You know, I think that that lineup construction might be the way to go for some of your lineups this week too.
What about Tiger Woods here? Strokes gained around the green. It's going to be a little bit more. Important, you know, a lot of sand out there. If there's roll off from the greens at all, you know, the green side work's going to help get it done here. And that's where Tiger's excelled, obviously. His approach game has been really, really nice over his last five, really his entire year. He's had a really good approach game. If he can just keep his tee game strong, and it's been steadily improving every single tournament, he's gotten better with the driver.
Hopefully he doesn't have to hit the driver here. I know in his press conference he said he's looking at, you know, hitting a lot of irons and three woods off the tees, and you know, that was seemed to be the recipe for success when he was at Copperhead there at the Valspar when he was contending on a Sunday recently. So I'll have some Tiger. I really like him this week. The fanboy in me wants a Tiger Woods on red on a Sunday, making a charge up the leaderboard. So, and if he does that, I definitely don't want to miss out, in DFS. So I'll definitely have some Tiger this week.
Oh, I will always have FOMO with Tiger Woods. I'm so
scared of missing the Tiger Woods win.
Oh yeah. Oh, I would never want to do that.
No, I'm always, so sad.
I've always dreamed of him coming back and just being a crazy big
dominant force play. Again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, but the only thing I have to worry about with Tiger Woods here is his event history. I know in 07 he finished 12th, 99 he finished 7th. That seems good, but you gotta remember that's Tiger Woods in 1999, in 2007. That's pretty bad. That's like a miscut for Tiger. Right? He's coming in off of two straight Open Championships for the 2007 Open Championship, and he put up a 12th, and that's a turd burger.
Right. Was it 1999? That might have been his first British Open. No, because he was a U.S. amateur champ.
Yeah. Oh, that was right before he started that insane cut streak. Last like 5 years.
Right.
It's so good. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll have him a GPP and stuff.
Yeah, he's not a cash play by any means, but... Yeah, I'll have some GPP action with Tiger.
Yeah, and the same thing with Fowler. Focus him more on, you know, the higher dollar tournaments. I don't know about like the 12 or 33 or something, but you know, the Court Arcade, I'm sure he's gonna be very popular. Like the free contest, I'm sure he's like 40% owned.
Right. Yeah, least. Get your ownership on him in some of those higher dollar entries.
Yep. And that's just the case with the fan favorites. You always gotta do that. So 8K range here. It's looking really strong. You've got Molinari, who just won, looking like he's going to be the play in this range here. Till you get to the lower 8Ks, and of course you've got Stenson that sticks out, kind of like a sore thumb when it comes to value. But he's coming in a bit questionable here. He's cited an elbow injury as his reason for withdrawing from the Scottish Open. I don't know what you've heard about that. I haven't heard much yet.
I heard he like cleaning out his garage, he hit it and didn't swing a club for 2 weeks, but I don't know how much of that is hyperbole, or you know what I mean, like that could be complete fabrication. And I saw pictures of him playing on the course today, so I mean it appears that he's fine, but it's Henrik Stenson, and you know it seems like there's always some sort of cloud over his head.
I'll let you do the analysis here. I'm quite biased. I have to play him no matter what.
You do. I think you just look at his what does Henrik Stenson do well?
Everything.
Hits it in the fairway. He hits
except for driving the ball.
Right. He hits his 3-wood in the fairway. Doesn't hit it a long ways, but his approach game is just there's not a better godly player on either tour coming into the greens than Henrik Stenson. And around the green, not necessarily the best, but he's just at $8,200. Like that's such a big value. I think Stenson's cash viable this week. I'm probably gonna. I'm not sure how much I'll have Stenson in GPPs, just because I really like Alex Noren. But yeah, I think and I think Stenson will be fairly chalky in GPP. But yeah, he's firmly in play for me this week.
Yeah, I'm just going to load up on him, though. Kind of really wondering what to do with, like, this Molinari guy here. He almost won 2 times in a row. I don't know why he played the John Deere Classic last week. I guess it was to warm up in America for the British Open. But he just saw some easy money, and he pretty much got it, finished second.
Yeah, nice payday.
Yeah, lost to Michael Kim, who out of nowhere just... I don't know what he did. He must have like used the Monstar's power to just absorb Jordan Spieth's prowess or something.
What was it? Like 6 out of 7 missed cuts in a row, and then just came out and dummied the field by 8 strokes. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was bizarre. But hey, you know, a scrub event like that, I mean, that happens.
Right.
Just throw your hands up and like.
Does Molinari's mediocre event history concern you a little, or?
I mean, he does have some really good finishes here. It'd be like, what, 5 made cuts in his last 6?
Yeah.
It's not bad. I missed the cut last year. And, you know, Molinari, he's, of course, you know, he's always really good on the European tour. This year is no exception at all. His recent form in the PGA Tour and his recent form in the European Tour are both a second and a first, his last two.
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty darn good, I'd say.
28-1, some of the best odds in this range.
Yeah. Oh, that'll go down, too.
that'll drift.
That'll trend a ways. They'll probably hit like 25, which is kind of crazy, but I could definitely see that happening. With Paul Casey right there, who's, you know, coming off a runner-up finish as well. I mean, I'm not really entirely sure of where ownership is going to end up. I just know that you've got Jason Day and Hideki Matsuyama sitting right there.
I would imagine
really, really low owned plays.
Right. Are we going to see it fairly spread out here, or is, you know,
I think it's going to be start to pour onto Molinari a little bit. I want to say that Casey might get lower owned, but that never really happens. Everybody loves Paul Casey. He's always going to be 20% owned. I mean,
yep.
His numbers, just if you look at his overall numbers, 92% made cut percentage, 84% adjusted field rank. It's sickening how good he is.
Right.
11th last year. I mean, then you've got Jason Day, who's just, you never see him in the 8Ks, even in these strong tournaments. I mean, I guess he was priced like this back when he was struggling, but he's been fine this year. Just had the bad performance at the U.S. Open. But other than that, I mean, he's been playing really well. I don't know. He's just going to get overlooked a lot, and I kind of want to cash in on that a little bit. But, you know, as for a course fit, I could definitely see him getting in trouble here. But, you know, I could say about a lot of guys. I mean, technically, Brooks Koepka is the highest double bogey or worst percentage of all the studs, but we're playing him comfortably.
Yeah, it's hard because you have to make, I mean, unless you're playing 400 lineups, you got to make a stand somewhere. Oh, yeah. You know, and it just comes down to who do you like the best. Like, I think Casey's fine. I think Casey will finish top 20 or your top 30. He'll make the cut comfortably. I'll probably play more Paul Casey in cash than GPP, but you know, I think there's guys around there that I would just personally see myself in lineup construction. I see myself with a lot more Patrick Reed and Jason Day than Paul Casey.
Oh yeah, I hadn't gotten to Reed yet, but yeah, Reed's gonna be a really nice play here. Just not on FanDuel. He's priced quite appropriately.
Yeah,
for Day there.
Yeah, Day is priced appropriately on FanDuel too. Anybody in here not priced appropriately? Norton.
I'd say that Day is probably priced inappropriately on FanDuel, just too expensive.
Yeah, he's too high.
Like, why should he be more expensive than Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy?
That doesn't make any sense to me.
He has literally double the odds of Rory. So, I guess you play him as an extreme contrarian play on FanDuel or something.
Yep.
So, you've got Norton and you've got Reed, just $100 and $200 more dollars. Then Stenson there, who we assume will be the chalk here. I don't know how much the news will scare everyone off, but you know, the course history and all the stats will definitely
right.
up there. He's never not chalky. I mean, they do this every single major tournament. They just underprice the crap out of Stenson, and everyone plays him, and everyone's fine.
Stenson and Kuchar, chalk Stenson and Kuchar, every major.
But those are my two favorite golfers. So thanks for that, DraftKings.
I mean, I think that the play is probably if you're trying to differentiate your lineup. So say you have a Brooks and you know you want to get a little bit off of that. Yeah, I like Reed and Norin and even Hideki a little bit.
Yeah, you have to get off of the chalky guys. You can't just overload on them. It's kind of like going to Vegas and betting a whole bunch on like a fighter that's like -500. That's never a great strategy long term. You always want to get leverage through just picking guys that aren't all that like that much worse, because you know, especially with the variance in the tournament, you know, the difference between two guys in the price range really won't be all that much. I know that Mickelson's got considerably worse stats or worse odds than Stenson right now, but I mean, you know, how different are Phil and Henrik really, just overall, as far as like their possible range of outcomes?
Right. Yeah, so, I you got it. Like I said, you got to make a stand somewhere, and I'm gonna have some Stenson, but I'll have probably significantly more just personally Alex Noren and Patrick Reed.
Yeah, Noren. I don't know how sneaky he'll be. I'm sure that people will own him coming off the. The victory
off a win in France, which is kind of a Lynx style course. When you know, you don't obviously think Lynx style when you think French golf, if you ever think about French golf, but they more of a Lynx style course over there. And he just one of those guys, I know we were talking about earlier, that just plays better in Europe than he does in the U.S.
You're going to catch some heat from Clement Sordet, man.
Clement Sordet. Sebastian. Or Alex Levy.
And Gregory Havre. How dare you diss French golf?
Right?
Where they're on top of the world right now.
Where the Ryder Cup is.
Yeah. But we also saw Noren finish third at the BMW PGA Championship. Another strong field there. Hadn't seen him the last 2 weeks, which is
surprising. You know,
it's been a weird 3 weeks. The last three European Tour events have been a lot stronger than the American events. Just getting ready for the British Open. Everyone going there. I wish DraftKings would have understood that. But yeah, Noren. Hey. I mean, I know that the last time out, his approach wasn't good. But, you know, his putter is tremendous. It always kind of has been.
Yeah, you can bury him.
Yeah, just good off the tee work. You know, you're kind of concerned about the approach, but long term, I know that he's a good ball striker. Just kind of ran into some problems recently in America. I mean, I don't even know about in Europe. You know, I'm sure he's been doing pretty well in that regard over there. He's always high on the greens and regulation numbers. I like his total driving a whole lot. 300 off the tee with 67% driving accuracy.
Solid.
I think, yeah, the total driving guys this week, I think I'm just really, really looking to. That's why I like Rose. I mean, there are many reasons to like Rose, but I like love Rose for that. And yeah, because it's such a long par 71, 7,400 yards, but you know, you also have to keep it on the fairway, and you have to hit it just right so it won't roll off the sides.
Right, and yeah, you don't want to get into the rough, and there's a lot of OB here. And then when we talk about, you know, those bunkers, you know, there's not only are there bunkers, you know, you hit another bunker on the PGA Tour at the John Deere Classic, you're not really penalized, but here you hit it into a fairway bunker, and 9 times out of 10, you either got to hit out sideways or hit out the back, and that's you know. Being able to place your ball in the fairway is going to be huge this year or this week.
Yeah, I watched Trey Mullinex. He had hit it in the fairway bunker, and without hesitation, he reached for his 3-wood. That's not going to happen this week.
Not going to happen this week.
He did kind of lip it and went into the water, but that would happen like 5 times harder here.
Right.
In the low 8K range, you've got Phil, who I think people are going to be skeeved off of with his miscuts recently. You've got Mark Leishman, who has a really, really solid event history. 3 top 6s in his last 4 tries, and he's just improved so much as a golfer. Always has top 5 upside, has winning upside.
Yeah, he just outside of, I mean, 13th at the Quicken Loans in a not excellent field, but before that, just a couple of mediocre starts on the PGA Tour. But then you go to the Byron, which we're talking about as a link style course. And what does he do? He finishes second coming off.
Yeah, he kind of pop after some questionable form. I mean, the form overall is kind of shaky, but it's just, he does have that top 10 upside.
Absolutely.
It would not surprise at all. Although I will say when he went to a playoff in 2015, that was St. Andrews, which I don't really like comparing to this course a whole lot. Because that one, just kind of bomb it out there. It's so freaking wide. This one, this course is a lot tighter and longer.
What year did Rory win? 14? What did he do? 5th and 14. That was kind of a birdie fest.
Yeah, that was the scoring fest year.
Who won in 15? Was that ZJ's year?
ZJ. We need to talk about him when we get to him.
Yeah. Wasn't a scoring fest, though, and he finished well there. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you think Leishman, you can play Leishman in cash?
Yeah, I used to, I still kind of do, but I mean, as a rule, I pretty much played Leishman in cash every single week for like 2 years.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good cash play here in this range. I really like him on FanDuel, too, 9,800. That's a really good price for his odds.
Well, I don't know. I'd probably actually rather go Grace here. Grace has just been on a solid cut-making run. That you just kind of get on that train. They both finished 6th last year here. But, you know, Grace he's from the European Tour. Obviously very comfortable here. Excellent wind player. And
he shot at 62 last year here.
Yeah. So I do a Grace and cash before Leishman.
Sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you can play both. They're in that price that you kind of want to build your cash rosters from too.
Yeah. Then we've, So getting into this, the 7K range here, I was working our way down the field. We've got Tyrell Hatton at $7,900, really polarizing figure. He loves to not only miss the cut here, he loves to miss the cut by like several strokes.
Bad.
Except for 2016. Bad. Oh man, that course history is, or the event history is just garbage. He's never played this course before. Right. Well, he has.
He's played it very well.
Yeah,
and he's played it well at the Alfred Dunhill Links. Does he have two wins here?
Yeah, the last 2 years, in 17, 16. So, the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, it's very similar to the Career Builder Classic or the Pebble Beach Pro-Am on the PGA Tour that has three courses just to make my life very difficult. And they play it once overall. It's not the final course. They go between, what is the third course again? I think it's... It's Carnoustie and it
St.
is
Andrews, and then what's the lot? I can't remember the last one.
I don't know, but So we kind of want to look to that a little bit, but that was a while ago. The last Alfred Dunhill Links, I think that comes up in like the fall.
It's like a late August event, and it's a pro-am, so course is set up a little bit easier to score. They actually play Carnoustie at a par 72 instead of a par 71. For the Alfred Dunhill Links, but the guy's obviously comfortable here. He's had some good rounds, so that's good to see. I think Terrell's a GPP play for me. I really like him. Hits it pretty, we talk about total driving, 297 and 65. That's pretty solid. Good approach game, but pretty good around the greens. The only problem is that he's a complete head case on the course sometimes.
Just stack him with Rom,
right? He missed a putt for par. Had to hit it out of the sand, and when he was going to knock his tap in this week at the Scottish Open, he turned and yelled at the sand trap, like literally yelled at the sand trap. So I'm not. He is a little bit of a head case, but I think he's a boom or bust GPP play. Like, there's no question in my mind that he could come out here and top 10 this thing, or he could miss the cut by 10 strokes.
Not even unanimous objects are safe around this man.
Yeah, I know. That's what his I tweeted on this weekend. Just yelling at inanimate objects. Way to go, Terrell.
All right, we got to steamroll through the rest of this field here. But a lot of interesting plays to talk about. I mean, Ian Poulter. We've seen him do nothing but top 30s. He's kind of migrated over to the European Tour since getting his win, the PGA Tour, to get his spot in the Masters and here. Poulter, I don't know. He's someone that I'm targeting. I know the odds aren't great compared to Hatton and Grace right there. You got to kind of be a little bit different this week. And I just like what Poulter does overseas. A lot more comfortable over there.
Yeah, 14th year last year. He's a top 30 machine. I think Poulter's a guy who we could see, even playing in cash. He's just that type of player. He's just steady. I don't think he's gonna win, but he's a guy who's gonna come out and finish, top 25.
He's very, very consistent with his approach game. His putter's just been. It's been lights out for a while now.
Yeah, he just makes everything he looks at.
Oh yeah, it's just been so long that he's been putting for so well. He's doing the same in the European Tour. But you've got Bubba Watson and Adam Scott also in this range. Scott's got perhaps the best event history here for someone who hasn't won. Maybe the best of just everyone. Makes the cut every single year. In 2007, he finished 27th. Four top 10 finishes in a row from 2012 to 2015. I know he missed the cut darn badly at the U.S. Open.
Heartbreaking loss in 2012.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to make of Scott here. Just so...
I think, he hasn't played. Has he not played since the U.S. Open?
I haven't seen anything from him.
Oof, duh. That's hard. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get on a guy who hasn't played in over a month and a half.
It was so bad with his approach last time out, which it's kind of worrying. It's
like, why you play Scott? That's concerning. I probably won't have much Scott, even given the course history. I just, I, like I said, I have a hard time playing a guy who hasn't touched. I mean, obviously he's touched a club, but hasn't played competitive golf in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the guys have just been chilling since the US Open.
But at least they're getting like a round or two. You know, even a Paul Casey has played an event.
Playing in Europe.
Yeah. Right. Or playing in Europe. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not super interested in Scott. Watson's a little interesting to me. He has the game that should be successful over here. You know, you think of a guy who's a good ball striker, not wildly accurate off the tee, maybe a little more wild than anything, but he's just good short game, imaginative. You'd think he'd do well here, but strings together some top 30s, top 25s, nothing too special, but. Again, he's won 3 times on tour this year, so guy's playing good golf.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to use Bubba, honestly, because trying to keep the player pool kind of condensed this week. Right. But I don't know if Bubba will make the cut exactly. I know that Scott probably won't, but I don't know. I'll probably take a shot on Scott just for the event history. But Bubba, I mean, he's an insta-fade on FanDuel, where his price is just whack. On DraftKings, because you can draft anyone. So there's nothing wrong with using Bubba at all. He's probably a pretty decent play. Obviously, he has the winning upside, like you'd said.
Right.
But I feel like all of his wins, though, were at places where he had some really, really, really good course history.
And sure.
His course history is, I mean, he doesn't have course history here, but, you know, he's not really someone I think of as being a big, like, European guy performing well. If this was in China, I'd be all in on him.
Right? Yeah, if this was the Shenzhen Open or whatever that one is, I'd be all over Bubba.
Oh, yeah. What about Russell Knox? Put together some crazy finishes in the Italian Open, Open de France.
Is he going to really be chalky here, you think?
If he would have...
Based on his recent form?
If he would have posted another top five last week and didn't fall apart, he would be really chalky. But being next to Kuchar... And Oosthuizen in a major, it's going to be kind of tough. Even Fitzpatrick. I think a lot of people know that Fitzpatrick is really good on the European Tour.
Right.
Like a top 15 machine. Now, the one horrible missed cut at the Italian Open, but other than that, it's pretty much all top 15s for him.
Yeah, he's been solid.
He was one of the, you know, you saw a lot of the European guys. They all took the boat over for the Honda Classic, and a lot of them fell on their face. Like Hatton was one of them. Fitzpatrick was one of them. Cabrera Bello still hasn't recovered. I'll talk about him here real quick. But you know, Fitzpatrick, I think he even turned it around with the 12th at the U.S. Open. He's extremely accurate off of the tee. Not really long at all. Actually, really, really short. But you know, just good enough to be able to play without it being too much of like an issue. Really good.
Yeah.
Greens regulation. Gained almost 2 strokes approach to the U.S. Open. I mean,
yeah, I get on board with Fitzy here. Yeah, 7,600, that's a good price tag. And, you know, you're looking, I'm probably fading Rafa Cabrera, RCB, and a couple of guys in that range. So, yeah, he's one of my favorite plays here in the $76, $7,700 range.
Yeah. I kind of want to play some Peters here, $7,600. Cabrera Bay, like you said, 3 missed cuts in a row. I can't really trust that. Cantlay, I always really like Cantlay a lot. He rates out pretty well here, but he's another guy that's, you know, debuting in Europe. That's what really gets me to pause with him.
He's debuting in Europe at a course with 100 and some bunkers on it. I just can't bring myself to play a lot of Patrick Cantlay this week.
Nope.
But I think he'll be popular. I think, you know, people like him.
Yeah, he kind of always is popular. He'll be in the teens, maybe like 12, 13.
All right.
But Bryson DeChambeau, kind of a...
No.
Yeah, we need to talk about the man.
Yeah, he really killed a lot of people's lineups last week. WDing with a dislocated shoulder.
It's brutal. But
and
if it wasn't for that, he would probably rate... Like, if it wasn't for all of that, he would probably be like the highest value play of like almost
I've
just been on fire before that.
Right. No, I'd love him. It's concerning to me that I know one of the Golf Channel reporters says that he hasn't swung a club since Thursday. I'd like to see if he plays, you know, practice round tomorrow or something like that. But yeah, like you said, if he doesn't WD last week, we're crushing him here. So to me, that makes him a decent GPP play. because he should be just criminally underowned for how good he's been playing this year.
Yeah, he was going to be 40-1. Now he's 80-1. And right. Just getting worse drastically.
Yep. Yep. He'd be a massive, massive value here if it wasn't for the WD last week.
Yep. Then
Peters, you know, I mean, you're talking about you could put him and Rom and Hatton and have the head case team together, because I feel like every time I see a highlight of Thomas Peters, he's breaking a club or doing something like that. So, he's been playing well lately, you know, sixth last week at the Scottish Open and, you know, after a really nice Sunday finish. So, yeah, Peters could be sneaky down here.
Yeah. He got really hyped up as like the next kind of big guy. Right. And he's kind of failed to perform a little bit. But you know, we saw the top 10 last week and he's popped in some places. I think he won in, he was like made in Denmark, that tournament or something.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Yeah. So he can get it done. Usually pretty darn consistent overseas, you know, in America, he's had spots where he's popped off in majors. So he's someone that you have to consider. Kind of wayward off the tee. It's my real concern with him. But you know, he's initially coming in touted as like the next like big hitter guy. And
yeah,
you know, him and okay, but yeah.
I think he's again a guy that I might be willing to take a shot on in GPP. Not somebody I'm gonna really make a stand on though.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm gonna make too much of a stand on people. Kuchar, you know, should have won last year. Really should have won. Oh man, that would have been so storybook for him, but didn't turn out that way. He's missed two cuts in his last four events, which is just brutally bad for Kuchar.
Yeah, he doesn't do that. I was just looking at his recent form; it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, despite that 88% made cut percentage, usually he's just going to be a cut made machine, and he'll probably still have a high make the cut prop. Waiting for those to drop tomorrow, but. Yeah, they're just other plays in this range. I don't have to pile on 25% Kuchar like at most majors, I feel.
Right. Especially. Yeah. I think he could be underweight on him as opposed to what you usually are.
All right, so we need to get through the rest of this field real quick.
Hold on. Can we talk about there's a guy below Patrick Cantlay that
I missed somebody.
No, I just can't believe his performance last week at the Scottish Open. He was third. At the Scottish Open.
Out of nowhere.
Luke List. Out of nowhere. Like, out what the heck? Out of freaking
nowhere. Just for fun.
Do I have to play Luke List this week?
After missing several cuts in a row on the PGA Tour, he's just like, screw all this. I'm going to the European Tour. I'm feeling like Braveheart. Hit the ball like Braveheart. I wish I could see his stats. I can't pull those up. It's very annoying. I would like to see what he did. Did he just hit it 340 off the tee?
Right. Like, I was blown away when I saw him in the field, and then I checked my European Tour app on, like, Friday afternoon, and he was in, like, the top 10, and I thought, no, that's not right, but there he is, and Luke List, third place in the Scottish Open.
Man. But he's a really good player in FanDuel, kind of underpriced over there.
Yep,
DraftKings, sure. No. Like,
there's a guy, you know, I mean, as we keep going through here, I mean, I'm not playing Shane Lowry. I have minimal interest in Xander Schauffele, but Paul Dunn at $7,500 on FanDuel is a huge value.
Oh yeah, that's insane value. I mean, he's really good on the European Tour usually. Not last week. He sucked last week.
Yeah, screw he was you, awful Paul Dunn last week. He killed a couple of my lineups. And the problem with Paul Dunn is that he's not very accurate at the tee. He absolutely bombs it. But he is a excellent putter. You know, if he gets on the green, he can make it from pretty much anywhere. So he can go real low. I know he chased down Rom at the Spanish Open. Couldn't quite get it done on Sunday, but yeah, I have some interest in Paul Dunn. He's got decent odds there at 111-1 too.
So if you told me a year ago that Martin Kaymer would be $7,400 at the Open Championship, and I would not even consider using him. I wouldn't believe you at all.
Yeah, I have no interest.
He has been so...
I mean, he popped a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's had some top 10 finishes. Other than that, it's been all miscuts.
Like big miscuts.
Like, he's... What was it, like a wrist injury or something? And ever since then, it's just been so hit or miss.
Yeah.
I saw him on the practice putting green. He had like 15 different putters he was trying to use.
Yeah, that's usually not a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, that was a while ago, but
Sure.
He's just been so freakishly bad. Pretty much dead last. Like, there were, like, old guys that won the U.S. Open, like, in 1985 that finished better than Martin Kaymer. Just right. A little worrying. Hao Tong Li, he finished third last year. 16th at the U.S. Open. You know, usual name that does well on the European Tour. Probably going to make for an okay play. And
yeah, I think Chris Wood above him, too.
Yeah.
Two solid plays. And I don't know why FanDuel can't price up these European guys, right? But both of them are
a steal
on really FanDuel. Good values over there. Yep.
Yeah. Afid Barnrat, who I don't know what's been up with him. Usually he's just really solid on the European Tour, but even he missed the cut recently.
Yeah, he's got, played four times here in the British Open. I don't think he's, maybe he made the cut in 2014, but that's one for four.
Berger. Could not figure Berger out, man. Just had that surprise performance at the U.S. Open. Couldn't even make the cut at the St. Jude.
Yeah.
Huh?
And then just, I mean, right? Like, he got the better end of the draw there at the U.S. Open. He went out early on that Saturday and got the good course conditions and putted his butt off and just kind of hung on Sunday.
All I know is that I am not playing Johnny Vegas next week because it's just been horrifyingly bad for guys trying to win a tournament 3 years in a row.
Coming back, yeah.
Oh, man, like Matsuyama, he withdrew.
Brendan Steele, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he just finished like 50th or something. Like, it was bad.
Right.
So here's some really huge plays down here in the 7K range, low 7K range that are going to be crazy chalky. Get Tony Finau at $7,200. 27th and 18th in his two open championships. Just been excellent all year long. Kind of pops in every stat. Can hit the ball a mile. Just a bit wayward off the tee. And not a very good putter. That's his only downfalls here. He rates as our number one value on the research station this week.
That's
the same price. You know, this will make ownership interesting. Is the plays kind of being in the same price range here. You've got Zach Johnson, who I don't know. You could argue that his event history here is even better than Adam Scott's, despite the miscut back in 2010. He won in 2015, 14th last year, 12th in 2016, 6th in 2013, 9th in 2012. I mean, the guy is extremely consistent. Just the British Open setup, man, just works for him. And you saw last week, he had a pretty bad performance at the John Deere Classic, at least, considering what he usually does there. He had finished in the top five, like six out of the last 7 years. Came 16th, and he really had to fight back. He, like, made the cut by, like, what, a stroke or two? There's a real miscut concern with him and Stricker. He ended up being okay, and then Zach Johnson had a pretty darn good finish, and it was his third top 20 finish in a row on tour.
Yeah, he cost me a lot of money on Sunday by having that nice finish in GPP. So that was not great for me.
Yeah. I mean, he was really, really, really solid and consistent all year long until he was the chalk at the Players, ended up MDFing there with a horrible Saturday, then followed that up with a miscut Fort Worth invitation. But
it was like, what was going on with Zach, but he appears to be back now.
Yeah. I mean, take out those two tournaments, and that's probably one of the most consistent guys on the PGA Tour all year long. And then, of course, the farther you go back, the more Zach Johnson-y it gets. I mean, he's just really safe, solid play. $7,200. That's so just cheap. Ridiculous. You know, $9,700 on FanDuel's. Do it a little bit better, but that's still pretty good over there. Then you've got Lee Westwood, also just an excellent major history overall.
Good hasn't actually been playing that bad either, you know, on the European Tour. 32-19 WD, had a fifth at the Italian Open. He can't putt to save his life.
Yeah, he had kind of turned it around a bit. He kind of was struggling a bit, like, you know, half a year ago to like a year ago. But for the most part, Lee Westwood is extremely consistent on the European Tour.
Yep.
And, you know, he does well here and at the Masters. I think he does horribly at the U.S. Open, actually. But Westwood's kind of like Oosthuizen, where they up their game at the big-name tournaments, for sure.
Doesn't miss a lot of cuts.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah, Westwood's he's gonna be a really, really nice play. 86% made cut percentage on the PGA Tour. What's the sample size there? It's only 10 tournaments and 7 of them were cut tournaments. So it wasn't that big of a sample there, but usually he does really well. We know in the European Tour that's even better. Right. Then a guy that I'm really like, I almost want to bet him. Webb Simpson is 106-1. He's also 7,200. I'm going to be playing him too, just because I figure anyone at 7-2 is going to be kind of free. I also like Andy Sullivan, who's been extremely consistent on the European Tour until he was chalk last week. I think they have some really high upside here. Thorbjørn Olesen also, 3 top 6 finishes and a win his last 4 times on the European Tour.
Yep, I'm big on Thorbjørn. I like, we skipped over him, but Jorge Campillo over on, probably won't play him on DK. I'll get all my exposure on FanDuel, but 7,200 is really cheap for a guy that's got 2 top 10s in his last 4 tournaments.
Oh, yeah, him, Jordan L. Smith, and Thorbjørn Olesen. I mean, FanDuel is just, you could just play Dustin Johnson and then like a stud or two more, and then just pick any of these like low 7K guys that they just have mispriced.
That's pretty much what I'm doing over there this week. Yeah. Between Thorbjørn and Jorge Campillo and Jordan Smith and who else am I playing over there? Even lower.
I really do like the Jordan Smith play. I know he's missed 2 cuts his last 4 events, but if you go back the last year and a half or so since he debuted on the European Tour, dude is a crazy consistent cut maker.
Yep.
So
yeah, I like Jordan Smith a lot. I think he's a good play down here.
Low 7K range here. Still considering Keegan Bradley. Had to kind of add him. He was a late addition, which should help with ownership. Yeah. He gained
18th in his last time at the Open. He's got a couple of top 20s here at the British Open. So obviously this type of play kind of fits him, and he's playing, you know, fairly well right now.
He's scrambling out of his freaking mind.
Right? And that's what we're looking for here too.
Yeah.
Guy's good around the greens. Excellent. He's so good off the tee and so good approach.
Yeah. So, there's just some other random names here in the low 7K range. There's really, you could kind of make a case for a lot of these guys because there aren't a ton of 300-1 sort of guys. Everyone's kind of under 200-1 here. There are just a lot of people that'll have a shot, and there's going to be some under 1% owned weirdo that's going to be there, you know, the first 3 days or so, and everyone's going to be like, why didn't I pick him? Yeah, I wish I knew who it was. It could be any of these guys. There's so many options.
I'm going to tell you who it is.
Who's going to be?
Danny Willett.
It's not going to be Danny Willett. I can guarantee you that.
I am going to maybe play a little. I'm going to take a couple shots on Danny Willett. He's been playing better.
I have to. That might now be burning money. Crow with him or something, but right. I don't know. I feel confident about him not doing much. So at the $7,000 price range on DraftKings here, you've got Kevin Na, who finally won the Greenbrier Classic. I mean, it really did seem like a good place for him to pop off. I feel like, you know, he also had the 4th at the Fort Worth and 6th at the Byron Nelson.
Yeah, he's been playing really well.
Yeah. I mean, $7,000, that's him price. And Hoffman. That reminds you of the very first Masters that DraftKings had, where Hoffman and Nall were just, like, severely underpriced, and then they ended up being in the nuts together. I don't know.
Kevin Na pretty, I mean, four cuts in a row here at the British Open, too. That's pretty solid.
And Hoffman, man, he's just like Luke List, like out of nowhere. He's like, I'll go play the Scottish Open. Go get ready for this whole British Open thing.
Yeah, Charlie Hoffman. I couldn't believe that. 19th place.
Top 20, yeah. Not bad. You've got Peter Uihlein, who's returning to the European Tour, where he got the start of his career, sort of Brooks Koepka-ish. And, you know, he missed the cut last week, but he was 12th at the Irish Open. I think he can, he can definitely turn around, do really well here. When he played consistently on the European Tour, he was money.
I shouldn't have played Euro DFS last week because I basically just played 6 guys in a lineup that I was interested in this week. And Uihlein, miscut. Andy Sullivan, miscut. Paul Dunn, miscut. Like, all the guys that I was high on all missed the cut leading into this tournament. So, not great for my leaving a little sour taste in my mouth. But, yeah.
It's good for this week. You get to play it again.
I think Uihlein's for sure in play this week.
So,
anybody else here you like?
Looking a little bit at Julian Suri, but he kind of disappointed last week. Eddie Pepperell over on FanDuel, just because, I don't know. Actually, you probably don't have to go there. He's not been that great. Hadwin, man, if you're just looking at made cuts, then sure, Hadwin. But, man, there's nothing. Like, you can tell by his adjusted field rank compared to made cut percentage that he's making the cuts, but he's not doing anything with it.
Not interested.
Once we break into the 6K range here, we start getting some real pockets of value here. Like at 6'9", you got Russell Henley, two straight top 10s in a row for him, just really good form, gaining all the strokes everywhere. And you've got Bo Hostler, who's been extremely consistent, 6th and 2nd his last time out. Why he's 6'9", will continue to confuse me. He's also over at 150-1, the odds books. I know I just mentioned that these young Americans making a debut overseas. I mean, it's just like compared to some of the other guys, you know, like.
Right. I'm going to play a lot of Matthew Southgate. I really like his game.
Yeah.
He's just so solid off the tee. 6th and the 12th the last two times in the British Open. Great approach game. He's just kind of been a cash register on the European tour the last few weeks. So another guy with solid form he's probably going to get popular just because guys in the DFS community are going to identify him as a good play. But I'll have quite a bit of Southgate, especially on FanDuel.
Yeah, he started out last week 200-1. He's already down to 140-1. Only I was looking at Alexander Bjork there. We haven't got to talk about him yet. He's going to be amazing. But Southgate started at 170, is now at 115.
Yep.
To one.
So obviously getting bet down.
Yeah, only Stuart Sink has moved more than him.
Stuart Sink.
It's not Stuart Stink anymore. He was playing like Stuart Stink for a little bit, but he's turned it around. Some really good finishes in a row.
23-2-4. I like him down there.
Yeah, 6,600. But going back to 6,800 real quick. Or even at 6,900, like Kyle Stanley at 6,900.
Yeah, that's
really good last week, but I mean.
Yeah, you could play Stanley. I could get on board with that.
Yeah.
What as we go down, Ryan Fox obviously is in play. But I really like Dylan Fratelli, another guy who just was awful on the American side this year and has now gone over to the European Tour and went 23-14-12.
I think Fratelli actually did pretty decently on one of the WGC events. I think it was.
Was he okay at the match play?
Maybe it was Honda.
Yeah, maybe you're right. But yeah, Dylan Fratelli.
Honda Classic, he finished 11th.
Yep. Super in on Dylan Fratelli there. Another great value down here.
Yep, and Alexander Bjork, second on the European Tour in strokes gained approach. He's $7,300 on FanDuel, $6,800 on DraftKings. Just been awesome the last 3 weeks. You know, in those stacked European fields, he's finished 19th, 14th, and 8th. He's incredible value. And then, you know, you cannot forget about Emiliano Grillo. DraftKings just hates this guy. Like, Emiliano,
I don't understand it.
With, like, the CEO of DraftKings' mother or something, because, like, they always, always underprice him every week. Like, they hate his face or something.
You think he should be pretty chalky this week, I think, down here. I mean, but then again, you don't, you think that, but then, I mean, you don't have to go that low to build a good lineup this week either. So,
I feel like anyone scrolling down will see, like, his 18 out of 19 cuts with, like, really high fantasy points per game and all that. Like, he kind of sticks out. But
anybody else down here that you have interest in?
In this exact range, I don't know. Nicholas Kolsaerts, maybe? He's known to get groovy with the driver, but he's kind of high in his odds. Like, anyone over 200-1, I'm kind of worried about.
Yep.
And then, because you usually don't see those kind of guys winning. They usually have some amount of pedigree to them. Ryan Moore at $6,700 on DraftKings. That's insanely cheap for someone as good as him.
Yeah, I would agree. Big value there.
And then the trap that I'm going to fall for this week, because I just, I swear to God, like Charles Howell III has been playing so much better than he usually plays. Like, at this time of the season, he's made is that six? Okay.
Yeah.
That's seven top 30s in his last 8 events, all made cuts. The dude is crazy consistent. Just 25th at the U.S. Open. I know he missed the cut last year, and it wasn't close. But he has made the cut here before, way back.
I'm not going to play Charles Howell, but when he wins, or when he top tens, I'll be super excited for you.
In cash, I just like his made cut percentage, 89%. And that is in 35 events. Adjusted field, like 72%. You don't see that in anyone else in this range at all. He's even looking better than more, honestly.
Right.
So,
yeah, really. Comparable. I mean, when you think about it, Moore's got maybe a little better event history, but
he's got considerably better odds, so he's a lot safer, but, you know.
Sure.
I think everyone,
yeah,
everyone
I'm bored
knows how late went in this thing.
No.
So, be sure to check make the cut odds. Those are going to be posted tomorrow or whenever they're up on the books. Those are going to be a lot more indicative of performance here because a lot of these guys, you know, like some guys have higher win odds just based on them having won recently. Things like that.
But
the bottom of this field here, I will talk about Erik van Rooyen real quick. He was going to miss the cut just awfully last week, but he turned it around.
Shot a
6-under on Friday to make it on the dot. He had basically been this guy that's just performing out of his mind on the European tour, unless I roster him, in which he does poorly. But thankfully, it hasn't been very often. He is dead minimum on FanDuel, and he's going to be an extremely good play over there. So should be mindful of that. Just so many free plays on FanDuel there. And then we had mentioned him earlier at $6,600, Stuart Cink. 23rd, 2nd, and 4th his last three times out. He's gained strokes approach every single time this season.
It's like a resurgence. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it hadn't really led to a lot of solid like performances. You know, a lot of like questionable made cuts, missed cuts. You know, but last year he was kind of doing the exact same thing. He's just about his business.
What did he have for sync here? 66. Second was at the Travelers. Yeah. St. Jude, 4th, 2nd at the Travelers, 23rd at the Quicken Loans, like three. I mean, obviously not excellent fields, but, you know, 2nd at the Travelers is pretty solid.
Yeah, those were some really stinky court, you know, overall just not very good strength of field. What's his average strength of field? Minus 1%.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, that's not strong at all, but I mean, he just hasn't really been qualifying for this sort of stuff. He came here last year, finished 123rd, but
yeah, he's got win, so he gets what 10-year lifetime exemption, or how long does he get to play?
Yeah, I think it's lifetime. That's why we see a lot of the guys at the bottom.
Sandy Lyle,
David Duvall,
yep, Todd Hamilton. No Ben Curtis in the field this week, though.
Nope. No, we get a Thomas Curtis instead.
There you go.
Or replacement Curtis. So yeah, no one underneath. Sink is what we're talking about. Maybe Siwoo Kim at 6,500 if you like pain.
Like right. Jason. Maybe Matt Jones.
Matt Jones. He's made three of his three cuts at the British Open, 12th last time out, but he does it all. If I recall, he got like his high upside finishes. He did those with the putter, right?
I guess I think so.
Let's last time out was off the tee and around the green. Yeah.
Yeah, bad approach last week. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really interested. Maybe Ryan Armour.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 66. I could get on board with that. He hits it so straight. You know, accurate, decent approach game. Very good putter.
I mean, I don't mind rolling him out there. He's not.
But again,
he's kind of short enough off the tee to be kind of hurtful. And he's 346 to 1. So, you know, just take a random shot on him. Really, DraftKings only, because FanDuel, all that value comes from the free 7K guys.
Yeah, no reason to play him on FanDuel.
Then anyone like
no six, reason to play like
four or under.
No reason to play like Stuart Cink on FanDuel either at $8,000.
No. Yeah, all those freebie plays,
all those free Europeans. But other than that, there's not a lot of guys that I'm interested in playing down here.
Yep. Oh, just all the exemption guys underneath. There's Bronson Berggren at $6,300, who people will be tempted to play, but he's also 364 to 1.
Yeah,
he'd be making a debut as a very young American in Europe, and I don't really want to target that. He did finish 16th at the Byron Nelson, though, so that kind of gives me a little pause. Like, if I have to, If right? I absolutely if you really have to need the salary, super low, like he's better than John Daly, I'd argue.
You're
probably not going to argue against me there.
No, I'll give you that.
You could possibly play Tom Lewis instead. Tom Lewis,
yeah, Tom Lewis can play. Lewis can play.
Yeah, he
can put it together. Tom Lewis, yeah. I mean, he qualified for the U.S. Open, 26th and 30th last two times out on the European Tour. Yeah, he could play Tom Lewis.
Yeah, he just got like his certain courses where he has really good history at. Yeah, he's kind of a cut maker and all that. Just at this. Yeah, at this cheap of a price, like 6-2 and under, those guys are all horribly bad.
Yeah.
You should not touch them at all.
No.
And yeah, so just any last thoughts about this tournament overall? Just some things to think about when you're thinking about the field as a whole.
Yeah. Should we go through this FanDuel quick pick?
Oh, yeah.
New format this week?
Yeah. So, yeah, real quick, going to go over the quick pick. Just starting with Tier A. So it's a new. It's a new format. They rolled this out in NASCAR last week. I think they're going to – it's pretty much their version of Pick'em. It's Tier A, Tier B, Tier C, or Tier D, kind of like Yahoo is, but not really as dumb with their tiers. They're pretty much just based off of value. Like Tier A is DJ, Justin Rose, Thomas Spieth, Rory McIlroy. So you just kind of attack it like you would Pick'em for like basketball or something. You know, one guy is obviously going to be the best player, like DJ here, and there's not really a salary. You got to play him and consider, you know, here's the thing that I learned with NASCAR last week is like we had Denny Hamlin starting in the very back, and he was in like the contender tier, and it was kind of really dumb to play anyone else besides that because all the other plays in that range were guys who weren't really going to lead laps at all, and they were starting up high and stuff. So it was like Hamlin was like an extremely obvious play, and of course, he ended up being the highest scoring of all of them and being in the optimal lineup and all that, but he was only like 30-something percent owned, which just shocked me because I was used to DraftKings where, you know, that field's obviously a lot sharper with NASCAR and stuff. And
sure.
Over there, he would have been like 60, 70% owned easily. So I'm feeling like, you know, in at least for the first few weeks or so with this new quick pick, I don't think you need to be contrarian. I think you just need to make no stupid plays and you'll be fine because... You know, everyone's going to get like 10% the ownership, even if they're like really shouldn't be. So I'll just look at this Tier A real quick. DJ, obviously, it's going to be him or Rose is the best pick here. Spieth and Rory had already talked about them not being as strong a play.
Great options.
Justin Thomas, who has made every cut this year. And, you know, he really has been a solid option overall. Just don't know if this is really the place where we'd want to play him, especially over guys like Rose and DJ, who have been just so lights out, phenomenal.
Lights out.
You know, Thomas, he's never won an event overseas. He hasn't really
played.
He came over for one event. Which one was it? It was
played the French Open.
French Open. It finished eighth. Wasn't bad at all, actually. I mean,
no.
Yeah, I would use Thomas as my, you know,
pivot. Was it one of the last couple of years here?
But what? Yeah. He was in contention there going into Sunday. But no, I think he actually like came back. Yeah, I think he was like just barely made the cut, kind of, and did his classic thing where he comes back, posts a strong finish. I think so because I remember I had Thomas there. But yeah, like Dustin Johnson obviously is the optimal play here. He'll be the highest owned, but I don't think he's going to be overwhelming either. Justin Rose is the most sensible first option off of him here. Then Thomas would be like the contrarian play. I feel like Spieth and Rory, they're popular enough that they're just going to get enough love to not really give you any sort of leverage, you know, especially Spieth being the defending champion here. I guess like Justin Thomas and Rory would be the nice little ownership plays. Oh, how do you feel about this tier A? Hello? Josh, you there? Well, I don't know if I guess Josh is disconnected for right now, or you there? I don't know. I have a little bit of technical problems here, but we'll I'll just go through this end the pod here real quick. I mean, we're towards the end here. Talking about Tier B here. Oh, wait, just got a message from Josh here. You there? I don't know, man. I can't hear you. So I'll just finish this one out. If he comes back, that's great. Hopefully he comes back. So yeah, the tier B here, John Rahm, Jason Day, Brooks Koepka, Fowler, Fleetwood, Stenson, Casey, Sergio. Really interesting tier. Wish I could have Josh take on this, honestly. I assume that Koepka will be the chalk here with Fowler. I mean, Fowler sticks out as the best odds to pricing value for sure. So, you know, I love me some Stenson. Fleetwood's going to get some love. Casey will probably go overlooked because he doesn't really, he's not really on the tier of golf for the guys like Day, Koepka, Rahm, and Fowler are. I guess Fowler's the highest owned, but he's definitely the best play. He's the only one here under 20-1 in the odds books. Fleetwood's kind of right there, and Stenson's nearing that as well. And then, you know, Sergio would be the lowest owned here easily, has by far the lowest fantasy points per game with his horrible finishes recently. But, you know, like I said about him being better on the European tour, I think I'll have shares of Sergio in this quick pick for sure. You know, Rahm, someone I'll try to avoid. Brooks, you know, I'll probably try to use enough Brooks, but I think he'll be very popular. Yeah, optimally, you know, if we're just talking optimally so far, you're going to pick DJ and probably going to pick Brooks here. Tier C, this is an interesting one. DeChambeau, you know, still questionable with the shoulder there. You got Phil, Bubba, some fan favorites up top. They should get some loves. Tiger Woods, obviously. So it seems like a place where you should pivot off of the popular, the guys who will be popular with the fandom. You got Patrick Reed, who's been playing excellently. Grace has been playing really steady. Leishman, these are some nice options to get off of some of these guys. Noren, who Josh talked up, he's an excellent option here. And then Molinari, he's going to be popular. He's kind of lower on the fantasy points per game side of things, but you know, he's coming in with elite form. It's great in Europe and all that. Poulter, you know, I showed him a little bit of love. I don't know if Poulter's, you know, in the range of guys like Reed, Tiger Woods, Matsuyama, but he'll make for a solid pivot play as well. And then Oosthuizen, just another dice roll. Tier D, you've got Finau and Johnson, who will definitely be the chalk here, along with Matt Kuchar. Certainly. They've got to be the most plays in this range, or the best plays in this range. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom here, Tyrrell Hatton's probably going to be very, very overlooked. I think he makes for a really strong tier D play. You got Adam Scott, Matthew Fitzpatrick, I think is sneaky tier D play as well. Patrick Cantlay, Webb Simpson, you know, some guys I like generally, but Finau and Zach Johnson are definitely more optimal plays. So if you want to be safe, I'd go Zach Johnson here. You know, ZJ or Finau, they're probably about, we haven't projected about similarly. And, you know, if you're thinking ownership, I really do like Tyrrell Hatton here and Fitzpatrick, Thomas Peters. But liking Hatton, Fitzpatrick the most there. And then when it comes to the field, you know, the guys at the very top, the fantasy points per game ranking, they'll show up first. So I'm sure that Grillo is going to be the most popular by far. But there are so many golfers you can pick from. I think you have to be contrarian with this pick. The guys in the first page are going to get attacked, especially guys with good game logs. Charles Howell, Bo Hostler. So this is where you get to really just kind of, you know, pick your random guy. You could be on a complete island by yourself if you just go down to some of the guys that have a low fantasy points per game, because they don't have their European Tour events on FanDuel. So, you know, you could look at a guy like Dylan Fratelli. Looks like he has 4 out of 8 cuts made. That's not great. 38 average fantasy points per game, but we know in Europe he's excellent. So, you know, someone like Fratelli is going to make an excellent play. Really, any of the 7K guys that we've mentioned so far on the pod are going to be really good plays down low, and they're going to have no ownership. So if you're going to mass multi-enter, it's probably a good strategy here, just kind of mix and match chalk pivoting plays from here. Because if Grillo doesn't do well this week, he's going to be so popular in the field section. It's going to help you get past a lot of the field. You know, maybe you can find that guy that has really good performance or even wins out of the, like the field section. The guys are just good enough here. Like they have like Jimmy Walker's in this range, you know, Kyle Stanley, Henley, you know, a lot of good European guys as well. You know, Kevin Na just won. He's on there. So yeah, the field, just try to get your under 1% owned guy in there. You can afford to be a little bit chalkier tiers A through D. There are just enough guys to really differentiate you and make it so you won't tie. The field part especially keeps you from tying. So those are my thoughts on the FanDuel quick pick. Gonna wrap this pot up real quick. Poor Josh couldn't figure out how to get back on here, but it's all right. So I hope you guys have a really good tournament. The Open Championship this week. It's going to be a splendid event. Lineups lock at 1:35 a.m. on Thursday morning. So be sure to make sure you get in the contest a little bit earlier this week. And don't tune in too late. You know, like things like the mini max are going to be gone quickly. So make sure you reserve or bulk enter to get in those. Use the domination station, the research station to your advantage. Come check out the premium Slack chat on Wednesday to get the latest up-to-date weather information. And if you want to be able to do that, you need to go to dfsarmy.com using the link in the description. And upon sign up, use promo code TACO for a lifetime 10% off. And we'll get you situated for the Open Championship. We're constantly monitoring this stuff. We do a really good job. Really proud of the work that we put in here. And we just crush it week in and week out. We need you guys to come join us, help make the Army stronger, and we can crush together. The contest is really nice this week. And we want to be able to put another huge win on the board. Just had a $100,000 winner in NASCAR the other week. It's a really big numbers from PGA as well throughout the last few weeks. The Masters, we did excellently at. US Open had a great week there as well. Had some big wins. Let's put some more wins on the board this week. All right, I am going to go to bed here. So I will see you guys later. You guys have a good one and put all those helmets up at the top of the leaderboards. I'll see ya.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.